Friends, we turn our attention to the reading of God's holy word. Would you hear this word from the Gospel of Luke, the first chapter, the 26th through the 30th verse. In the sixth month, the angel Gabriel was sent by God to a town in Galilee called Nazareth to a virgin engaged to be married to a man named Joseph of the house of David. The virgin's name was Mary, and he came and he said to her, "Greetings, favored one. The Lord is with you." But she was much perplexed by his words and pondered what sort of greeting this might be. And the angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God." Hear what the Spirit is saying. How are we doing, friends? That's good. Again, I hope everyone had a wonderful Thanksgiving. I'm still feeling the effects of all the stuff. And we don't have meals in my family, Barbara, at Thanksgiving and Christmas time. My dad calls it a mass feeding. Well, you know, when you have 50 to plus people that you're responsible for, it seems like a good idea at the time to have everybody. Until you start doing some of the cooking, and it's a lot. But thank God for the richness of my family. Look around to the folks on your left and of your right. We will pray for them. But before we do that, we're starting our new sermon series, Working Our Core Trust Walk. So while that is in your mind also, let us acknowledge the presence of people in the sight of God. On the person on your left, pray that God's Spirit might be felt during this service, that something that is said or sung or witnessed might inspire and encourage. To the person on your right, pray for God's Spirit to be felt, that something that is said or sung might transform and lead to newness of life. And then pray for yourself, that you might once again, during this time, open yourself up to receive a word that will encourage you and strengthen you as you go through this season. Amen. Well, we're going to set the context of core for us for a few moments. I've got three different movements of the sermon, and it's only going to take about 42 minutes. I've timed it. It's good. I have designed it to be more contemplative in nature, so I hope not to disappoint with not being as animated as some of you have come accustomed to me doing. I was a little intimidated this morning when I heard somebody went, "Oh, she's going to be fired up today." I'm going to show you that I can be contemplative. Thank you very much. And we'll see how that works for you. How about that? Friends, a good core helps to strengthen the entire body, and I would say even the entire being. A strong core helps to set the direction, Brother Tracy, for transformation. How many times have we said or even heard for ourselves when approaching a task, "All we need is a good, strong core of people to make that work"? I'm sure we've all said it or have heard it. Yesterday, we had a strong core of folk to participate in the hangings of the greens. They've done a wonderful job of transforming the worship space here, the nave, along with our Chrismon tree. We had good talk about that yesterday, Anna. I don't have time in the sermon this morning, but I promise to unpack some of the Chrismons on the tree in the coming weeks. Our altar guild leaders, David Ray and Amelia. I saw Amelia earlier. There's Amelia. And David, are you here? David's not here. Trust me, he spent many times here yesterday. led us. You will notice the Advent banners. These are brand new. What I'm calling her is our one of our artists in residence here at Foundry has designed these and painted these, and we thank God for her sharing her gifts among us. And then we had a chief volunteer yesterday. Is little brother Norman in here? He's not. He's already left. Oh, okay. He was one of the little cute ones up here. 6 years old. He was our chief volunteer. His dad was here with us yesterday, and we just had a wonderful time. So thanks for all of those folks. Louise came out, and Margaret, are you here? And there's Margaret and Beth. So thank you all so much for what you did to help. And then as we go through the Advent season, you'll see, I know somebody said they forgot the poinsettias. No, we didn't. We didn't forget them. You ever watered, you know, 40 poinsettias and try to keep them nice and fresh for 4 weeks? I didn't think so. They're coming. Just hold tight. Hold tight. Thank you. In the fitness world, many years ago, Larry, conventional wisdom suggested that it was widely practiced that sit-ups was the best way to work your core. I have done my share of sit-ups. In my collegiate basketball years, I did 200, and I'm not bragging about this, now understand that, I'm just passing it along for information. I did 250 sit-ups and push-ups a day. I even worked up to 500. I am so over that. You can tell. In the past several years, however, that wisdom about push-ups has changed. A few months ago, a special health report from the Harvard Medical School suggested that the conventional wisdom of push-ups being the best way to work your core is shifting. Push-ups are hard on your back. They strain your neck. For me, it didn't take Harvard study to figure that one out. Well, the plank is now the gold standard for working your core. Anybody ever seen somebody do a plank? Notice I say didn't, you haven't done one. Anybody ever seen somebody doing a plank? If you don't know about the plank, then thank God for that. Here's the deal about working your core. If the core is strong, then it's a high probability that the rest of you is strong. We think of it this way. Your arms are strong, you've got strong legs, but a weak core, that does not make for a strong body. In my formative years of training to become competitive in sports, my coaches always stressed the importance of strengthening your core. My basketball coach used to say all the time, Slim, get down and give me 20. Slim, get down and give me 25. They had me doing those dreaded sit-ups. Yet their wisdom of strengthening the core was accurate. We are looking at working and strengthening our core here at Foundry. Our core in this context is our community. Having a strong community is essential for continued transformation to becoming the blessed congregation that God is calling us to be and to do. We strengthen our core through the mission and ministries that make us who we are. Having a strong children's ministry and youth ministry is vital to our core. Helping to end the cradle-to-prison pipeline and ending chronic homelessness is critical. Having a presence in the global community is important. Advocating for full inclusion of LGBTQ brothers and sisters in the life of the church is essential. Now, let me just say a word here for friends and family that are visiting us today. You perhaps noticed when you made your way in to the sanctuary this morning, the banners that are outside of the church. One says, "Stop the trials." We here at Foundry are making our proclamation inside the church and outside of the church where we stand on the issue of LGBT inclusion in our denomination. We are calling on our bishops to be more prophetic in their witness and in our denomination to heal the great divide of marriage equality and full inclusion in the church. We say here that we are practicing biblical obedience, and we believe that we are being faithful to the gospel of Jesus Christ when we are doing this. We're not going to back down. We are in this for the long haul. Another way that we look at working our core is living out our core values. Pastor Dean, about a month and a half ago, did a wonderful sermon series on our core values. These sermons are on our website for your listening pleasure. A way to work our core is to strengthen our community. It is through trust. Two of the most promising words and at the same time suspicious words, Amelia, that many of us will say or receive is, trust me. These words can instill great fear in the doubter, yet great promise in the believer. Now, this is a very highly engaged community, and people got a lot of important jobs. You remind me of that from time to time. Anyone ever participate in those wonderful group building activities, the trust fall? Corporate America loves this stuff. You don't speak almost all year long, and then you get out there to that dreaded field, and now they want you to trust somebody. And there's always that one person that you're just not sure about, because you remember the conversation that you had with that person. It didn't go well. And there they are smiling at you. Trust me. Trust is important. Can you imagine the trust that the president of our country places in his security team to protect him and his family? Literally every day of the week, there is an enormous amount of trust that he has in people who have vowed to protect him, to protect his wife, and to protect his precious little girls, teenagers now, they would not want to hear somebody calling them little girls. We know that putting trust in folks runs across the spectrum, yet many of us go through our daily life oftentimes taking trust for granted. On the daily, you and I put an enormous amount of trust in other people. Let's test it out and see. How many of you eat out? How many of you use the metro system? How many of you ever been on an airplane before? We trust that these services we use and places where we dine are going to be safe. I am a bit of a germaphobe. My staff or people on the staff can attest to that, and even some friends. I get very wary about germs floating around and about, like I know that there are millions of them right now. I'm big on people washing their hands. Take a look at your hands if you have a moment. Say hello to the bacteria-infested, virus-catching hands. They are magnets for bacteria and viruses. These are terrible things when we don't wash them. The Mayo Clinic, and here's my health announcement for today. All the physicians in the house, you'll be thankful that I'm going to share this. The Mayo Clinic continually does studies, as we know. They have suggested that washing these little boogers go a long way in helping to prevent infections. A long way. We shake hands here all the time, and then you want to put your hands in your face, put your hands in your eye, and then you wonder what's going on with you. It's because you've infested yourself with bacteria. That's what's going on. Here's the thing about trust. The bigger the stake, the more aware we are of trust. I like to call this a conscious trust. Our physicians give us or our loved ones news that we don't want to receive. And we really want to trust that they know how to treat us or our loved ones. Yet many of us will take the time to get a second opinion. When we are more aware of the level of trust involved, we have to work harder at it. We can go day in and day out, getting on the metro, eating out at places, shopping in the grocery stores, and we don't think a thing about trust. All the people that have had to handle all of the stuff, all of the conductors of trains and the pilots of planes and all of these people, we hardly ever think about that. But the higher the stake gets, the more we think about trust. Let me test that out with us. How many of us really trust God in the most difficult of times? We lose a job. A family member dies. How in the world are we going to get through this? We think that we can do this on our own, and we can't. As a people of faith, we believe and trust that God is the one that is going to help get us through. Trust is essential to our daily living. It is at the core of us being loving and a welcoming community. Trust is among those virtues that are going to propel us to be better in our witness in the church and beyond the church. Living in and through trust will strengthen our families and our relationships with other people. A biblical model for the conscious trust is Mary, the mother of Jesus, who came to symbolize the church. A way we get to trust is living in the grace of God and recognizing that there is something bigger, a bigger being than us, and surrendering ourselves to the awesomeness of God. Sometimes I believe it's easier for some of us to put our trust in others than it is to put our trust in God. We can substitute the word trust for faith. Are we putting our faith in God? As we go through this Advent season, we are calling ourselves to examine what it means to venture into this trust walk with God, where we rely on trusting God's favor, trusting God's possibilities, trusting God's future, trusting God's community, and trusting God's provision. Now, for the next few moments, I'm going to focus on trusting God's favor, and Pastor Dean in the coming weeks is going to unpack all the rest of them. Hey, higher pay scale, higher work. Lord, I hope he doesn't hear this part of the sermon. I was doing so good. Mark these words again from the angel Gabriel that Mary, angel Gabriel said to Mary in the Gospel of Luke. Let's look again at the 28th to 30th verses. Greetings, favored one. The Lord is with you. But she was much perplexed by his words and pondered what sort of greeting this might be. The angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God." Well, Mary had good reason to be perplexed. She was a young virgin engaged to be married. Scholars suggest that she was between the ages of 12 to 14. A lot of people think that Mary was probably somewhere around 20 or in her early 30s. Mary had good reason to be perplexed when this angel, whom she did not know, came to her. Yet the angel allayed her fears. Gabriel said three critical things to Mary that I want us to take note. She is favored, the Lord is with her, and again, she is favored by God. The Greek word for favor is charis, which means grace, affords joy and pleasure. The angel wanted Mary to know that she was indeed in the presence of grace by God. God had selected Mary to be the mother of Jesus. God saw something in her that was good and righteous. God knew that Mary could handle this. Mary had a calling and a responsibility in all of this, however. Mary had to make a conscious decision whether or not she was going to trust in God's favor. Friends, many of us know and are familiar with Mary's story. We know that she gave birth to Jesus. We celebrate that. We know that Jesus is the Son of the Most High God. We glorify that. We believe that Jesus is the Messiah. We believe in salvation. What I want us to know and to understand is that this miracle was only made possible by trusting in God's favor. As Gabriel said to Mary more than 2,000 years ago, these words ring true for us today in 2013. Listen to this word, friends. It's for you. You are favored. The Lord is with you. Yes, you are favored by God. You are graced by God. You are blessed by God. We exist in a state of God's favor, and there is nothing that we can do to separate us from God's favor or God's love. Nothing, no thing at all. When we trust in God's favor, we open ourselves up to be true, to experience the true wonders of the kingdom of God. Trusting God's favor connects us with a richer experience of the fullness of God. Sisters and brothers, it's difficult to say how much we love God, how much we desire to serve God. God is our all in all. You know the things that people say, and yet we don't have trust, or we don't have faith. Like Mary, you and I have a calling. We have a responsibility. The stake, yes, is higher, but it is within our scope of understanding and believing that we too will live by a conscious decision in trusting God's favor. Amen.